When I look at the vision, it's how you see it all coming together. It's the process in itself. It's the ability for leaders to say, I have this idea, I have these ideals that come with it, I have the framework and structure of how we are going to go towards this common goal that we will all share.
Welcome to Mindful Warrior Radio, a podcast that explores the intersection of leadership, culture, performance, and flow. Through thought-provoking conversations with innovative changemakers and industry leaders, we uncover the mindsets, strategy, and experiences that drive personal and professional excellence. Each episode offers real-world insight, inspiring stories, and actionable wisdom to help you cultivate resilience, purpose, and peak performance in your own life. Today on Mindful Warrior Radio, we welcome Daryl Nelson. Daryl spent over a decade in the NFL with the New England Patriots and the Las Vegas Raiders, working inside some of the most demanding high-performance environments in professional sport. He began his career in athletic training with the Patriots, where he was a part of two Super Bowl winning championship teams, and later moved into a senior leadership role focused on how organizations more intentionally develop and support their people, both on and off the field. As a director of organizational development with the Patriots and later director of team growth and development with the Raiders, Daryl's work centered on the full ecosystem of performance: players, coaches, staff, and support systems. He helped integrate mental health, performance psychology, leadership, and culture into cohesive systems that aligned people, communication, and structures so that teams could grow together. Today, Daryl partners with leaders as a consultant in human performance and organizational development, grounded in his simple belief: when people feel supported, communication is clear, and structure reinforces strong work, sustainable performance follows. I am grateful to tap into the insight of Daryl today on this episode of Mindful Warrior Radio. Daryl, thank you so much for joining us on Mindful Warrior Radio. It is an absolute treat and pleasure to have you on, and I am so excited for our conversation today.
No, the pleasure is all mine, Campy. I'm excited for the conversation. Let's get it rolling.
Let's get it rolling. So you have spent a decade inside some of the most demanding high-performance environments in professional sports. And I'm curious, from your experience, what do most leaders misunderstand about what actually drives sustained performance over time?
The vision, how much the vision matters. I think a lot of times when people know what the goal is, what the intent is, and also being able to articulate what the process is, what the expectations are, to have all the information on the front end empowers the people to take the right steps forward, whether that's by modeling, whether that's by, you know, intentional, deliberate, you know, explanation. A lot of times the leaders are the ones who create the vision and the expectations. And once they pass it on to the people that they are leading, they're called to serve in that way, that allows the people to kind of move forward. Because at the end of the day, the process, like, when you sustain performance at a high level, is boring. There's a lot of mundane details that go into the process. And so the more that you can let people be autonomous in their focus on that process of day in, day out, 1% better every day, whatever that, you know, action that they're, you know, the task that they're focusing on, that vision, the expectations on the front end allows them to be able to do so in a more effective manner.
And so I'm hearing a little bit in what you're saying is that, like, the vision is the guiding light to the everyday consistency building foundation, building, you know, that grit over and over again with that hard work. But the vision is the light that carries you forward.
Yes.
Yes. That is that really resonates with me. And it's, I think you also clarified that the vision is different than the goal. How would you define differently vision and goal for our listeners? And why is that differentiation important?
Yeah, I think there's a relationship between the two. But when I look at the goal, that's a tangible thing. That's a win. That's a concept. That's a thing that you're pursuing. When I look at the vision, it's how you see it all coming together. It's the process in itself. It's the ability for leaders to say, I have this idea. I have these ideals that come with it. I have the framework and structure of how we are going to go towards this common goal that we will all share. At the end of the day, when you enter a specific group or type of team, you know, there's a lot of different types of goals, but when you have the vision of the leadership, they can allow and empower the ability to self-reflect, be able to have a high sense of awareness of self, and the self being the team. Once you have that, and once you have the vision, and then you have the ability to start the process itself, that's going towards the goal. But it's the beginning and the end and the middle of the process, and the process is the people. And to be able to do so, you have to have the effective leadership that can guide and create that ideology for them.
Let's talk about performance as a system. So you have described performance as an ecosystem rather than an individual outcome. Can you walk us through what an ecosystem looks like from your perspective and the work that you've done, and maybe where most leaders get either stuck or miss the mark or struggle often to close a gap within building these types of ecosystems?
Yeah. When I look at the ecosystem at large, whenever you have a lot of different organisms in one area, it doesn't make sense that they should all be in the same space, but then they create this thing that is greater than itself. It's just like, when I think of ecosystem, I think of culture. When I think of culture, I think of it as simple as it's like a tapestry. When you have individual things and strains that you draw together, and there's an interdependence between all those threads, and there's an intentional design that goes into those spaces. And by having all those people with, like we talked about before, with the vision towards the goal, when you have the vision, you have the design. When you have the design, you have the process that's going to reflect the vision towards the goal, which is on the back end, and you project it on the front end. But at the end of the day, when you're walking step by step by step, you have to walk in the dark. And when you look at the ecosystem, there's always so many different variety of needs, demands, and challenges. And for leaders, it's taking the time to recognize where those needs, demands, and challenges touch the different areas. Because at the end of the day, within an ecosystem, there's cultures within cultures. There's different departments within an organization, within a larger organization, within another different entity. And so when you look at the different ecosystems, it's having a good understanding of the small details, the cog in the wheel, as well as the big thing. What is the big ideology? What's the big focus? What's the big framework that captures all of it? And so when you have that balance of knowing all the different small details without losing sight of the bigger picture, you have to be able to zoom in and zoom out on a constant, consistent basis so that you're not missing the mark on both ends.
What are some examples of entities that make up a system from the work that you have done in these high-performing teams?
Yeah, I mean, my first exposure to an ecosystem was being an athletic trainer. My background was in sports medicine from the time I went to college all the way up to the NFL. And what I learned was, as I was an intern, I learned what it looked like to be within the ecosystem of the internship program, working with different peers that are from different subsets, different universities, all coming together in a short amount of time as summer interns, setting up the field. And then that evolved into eventually becoming a staff member. Okay, what does it look like to manage that ecosystem, as well as the one of being a staff member, which is serving a collective of the sports medicine department, whether it's the athletic trainers, the physical therapists, the chiropractors, all the different, you know, subsets of medicine that come into it. Then learning how to take that space and working in a high performance environment. So working with the strength coaches, working with nutritionists, working with mental performance coaches, behavioral health, practitioners, all the different areas that touch the athlete. And then it's also now you're part of different departments, which is within the actual football operations. So you have health and performance, you have operations. And so as I was started from the beginning, and as I kind of continue to move up the ranks, and like as I went and evolved through my progress of professionalism, I saw that there were so many different moving parts. And as I transitioned out of the athletic training room, and I got the opportunity to work with different senior leadership to be able to see that they're not only managing these areas as well as they're projecting up towards the even larger goal of the university or organization that I was working with. That was just like this like whoa moment where I'm like, wow, it's so much greater than you actually realize. But what makes it all work is the fact that the intern's job is to focus on their role. The staff members, the same thing. The coach is the same thing. The CEO, the ownership groups. Everyone has a role. And that's the beauty of the ecosystem. Everyone has a purpose, and every purpose is so vital, so important. Some are more visible than others. But when you look at the whole picture, what it's taking those progress step by step and being in all those different spaces, you realize that's one bubble. Within the bubble, you also have families that touch this. You also have the fans. You also have the, you know, agents and all the, there's so many things. So once you take a step back and you realize all the primary and driving and the core contributors, as well as the external influential points, that's understanding and having a good grasp on the needs, demands, and challenges of each area. So you're constantly balancing plates, but at the same time, you're still acknowledging where all of them start and stop and how they all come together and how they all intertwine. And that's interdisciplinary approach.
That, I mean, just even hearing the components of an ecosystem, it seems vast and massive, right? And how Yes. do you impact change? How do you facilitate culture in all of those components? But before we drop into that, I'm curious as to why is the integration of all of these components so critical? And what starts to break down when organizations treat these as separate entities rather than integrating them all?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, when you look at it historically, a lot of times everyone just, it's a comfort thing. It's a vulnerability. It's a willingness to be vulnerable with one another. And I mean, for me, when you realize, I'm going to take a step back. It really comes down to it's leveraging all the strengths that you have internally. When you are utilizing to the fullest extent all the strengths that are within your building, within your area, within your ecosystem, and you can think outside the box, you're going to be able to generate different types of solutions that are going to be more sustainable. Instead of thinking of one way, by being able to actually factor in and consider other different ways and ideologies and trains of thought that can help at least guide your insights. It might not change it. It might at least you can incorporate that. When you have that incorporation, it's just this flow. It's just these areas feed into each other. There's this natural generating, you know, you get this drive forward. You all come together and you have this momentum that you can't stop. When you work in silos, you really put your one hand behind your back and you're fighting with one hand. You are looking at it one way and you're throwing, you know, a dart at the dartboard, hoping that it hits every time. But when you can break down some of those walls, you give yourself more grace. It allows the pressures to be more dispersed. And it's helping a teammate in that you can utilize their strengths that where you fall short, they might help be able to elevate you and make you even a stronger entity in yourself. And so people, a lot of times when people say, well, you know, I don't want to do someone else's job, what breaking down silos is, it's empowering those who are on the other side of the wall. So when you look down, you can be vulnerable and show who you are, allow yourself to be a teacher and a student, and enhance your own best practices so that you're thinking outside the box. So when you come up with different areas, at the end of the day, it's the bigger picture. If you're in the sports world, the number one thing that matters is the athlete. It is making sure that the athlete's in the best position to perform, and making sure that if you're going to do that, athletes are evolving. People are different. People are challenging. They're ever evolving. I mean, yeah, anyone says, oh, people are easy, I'm going to be like, well, I want to buy your book, because that's just impossible, especially in the sports world. And in any high performance area, people are complex. And when you have complex people, the more that you can simplify things by making it easier and leveraging different areas and ideas to help your own to be able to serve that bigger picture, that's when magic can be created.
And from your work, how does clarity, systems, and a sound structure actually create freedom and flow? Like, how does freedom and flow come from structure and processes?
Yeah, that's great. That's a great question. And the first word that comes to mind is direction. When you know where you're trying to go, it helps to be able to be creative in how you get there, especially when you have the expectations set out for you, when you have the vision of what you're trying to accomplish, when you have examples and things like that. You know, the greatest example that I've been really focused on lately is the Grateful Dead. And the Grateful Dead is a jam band that they have structure of the song, they have lyrics, they have things that you know are going to be a part of the process of creating a song. But the beauty is when you let that flow take you over and you're just going with what you feel within the confines of the structure, and the structure allows you of the song to elevate and advance beyond it. And that's feeling it, because when you go to one of their concerts, you can feel their energy and what they're channeling is so great that is really trying to capture the essence of the true song. And when you have those experiences and when you see those things, like, that's a great example. You have different people who have different roles within the band. They have an identity. They have the idea that they're going to complete Fire on the Mountain. They go in, they know what song, but there's a freedom to that space. And when you can make it fun, and when you can make it intentional and competitive to where everyone can be competing with their best version of yourself, when you hear John Mayer go on a riff and he's competing with himself, he's not making it so that he looks great. He's reflecting the greater picture of the song, which is within the set, which is reflecting the actual ideology of what the Grateful Dead is. And so when you look at different areas, there's so many examples all around us. It's being able to extract those lessons and then reapply it to, like, oh, that's what they're doing. And that's where freedom is. And it's when you're a team, it's like being a jam band. Sometimes people are going to win. Let people win. Let them go on the band. Let them feel it. Once they know that, you know, you expect and establish that, don't play a different song. We're playing the same song. Don't turn the page on the song sheet. Play the song to your fullest extent. Play the song how you feel it. And those are the spaces when you talk about psychological safety, it's allowing people to have the strength and the structure and the security of the structure around them that they can lean into and then be free and being the creative mind and being the truest version of themselves for the greater good of the team and for the greater thing that you're trying to accomplish.
I love that you are connecting safety, psychological safety, to structure, and how that safety is critical for experiencing and reaching the highest level of performance, so that there is safety to be able to be expressive and be outside of the box and do things with curiosity and creativity. I think you have done a beautiful job illustrating the experience of flow and freedom and the energy that comes from you when you're describing it, really allows me to understand that you've experienced it in certain capacities, because you're such a display of the energy that comes from flow as you describe it. And I think that is one side of it. Can you give us a window into how is that flow really earned? Like, we talked about structure, we talked about psychological safety, but I know both of us know how earned it is to, using your example of the Grateful Dead, to be able to expand and riff and be attuned and aware, but within structure, but have full freedom. Like, that is such an earned moment. Yes. And I'm curious if you can kind of paint a picture of how that's earned to experience the euphoric feeling of flow and freedom within structure and safety.
Yeah. I mean, it's as simple as, if you want a six pack, you got to eat right. You got to do sit-ups. You can't just conjure it and meditate on it and hope it comes to you. You got to go get it. On the other side of the spectrum, and it's all connected, if you want to experience flow, you have to put the work in. The work is, but you have to love that part. I loved waking up at 5 o'clock and knowing that my job was to tape an ankle, treat athletes, go to a meeting, do this, do that, and then rinse and repeat. It's the embrace of knowing that you embrace the boring, you embrace the day-to-day, and you love it because you know that you're taking one step closer. And sometimes it's hard, and sometimes you don't see where you're going, and the progress is blind. Progress is very blind. And when you keep walking, there's going to be times where it's like the hero's journey. You need to have that chink in the armor. You need to have that issue that steps in your way. But when you just love the process and you embrace and recognize that it's not all about the wins, the losses are lessons, but at the end of the day, they're all lessons. You're putting together a body of work, not just one great day. I thought, the thing that I loved about working for the Patriots was every single day, my intention was to work at an A level, because that was the expectations of myself. That was the expectations of all my colleagues, all the athletes, everyone that was a part of this thing. And we didn't focus on the championships, like that was obviously what we're all pursuing. But what we talked about was, how can we make Wednesday's practice better? How can we improve our inside out technique in our tackling or offensive drills? It was the small details that we really harnessed onto. And so when you get to game day, flow comes naturally, because it's an extension and a reflection of the hard work, dedication, preparation that you put into the work every week. And being willing to, regardless of the outcome on Monday, looking back and saying, regardless of wins or losses, next week, let's go ahead and focus on how we can make this thing better. How can we improve putting this person in a better position to have success? And that's across the board. And so when you have a lot of different areas and all the different cultures, once again, it all ties together. When you have all the different departments thinking that way, when you have all the different areas, regardless of what amount of experience that they have, when people are constantly looking to improve and get better and love it and embrace it as the thing that is a non-negotiable, because it isn't. If you want to be successful, you have to acknowledge that the process is the thing that is the most important, not the outcome. Because at the end of the day, the outcome sometimes is not in your hands and control. However, you can put yourself in the best position to be able to earn that opportunity of being in flow if you put the work in. And not only do it to just get the outcome, but because you love what you're doing and you realize the purpose and you put yourself into this thing and it's not about you. And if you know that you, by you improving and not losing sight of yourself within the greater good and the greater picture, but realizing that the more that you pour into yourself to be the best version of yourself, you are going to innately be able to pour into the person that's next to you. And that's going to be your teammate that's helping your other teammate, that's helping the team, that's helping us win. All of it is matters. It's all connected, because if you're winning in all the different areas, when you collect all those into one thing, that's when flow can happen, because you can trust it. You know it. You don't get to flow if you half-ass it. You have to be there. You have to be fully there. And by doing that, it's almost the small details. It's not the big ones.
Absolutely. And I think that, again, you've painted a beautiful picture of how flow is earned. But what are some components or elements that you recognize that help teams and individuals recover and repair and move on kind of quickly and seamlessly? Because that recovery time, as you know, because you've worked, you know, directly with injury, there's the physical injury, then there's the mental and emotional injury of ruptures that happen in cultures, in systems. So what are you recognizing are key components to that recovery and repair and moving on to the next thing? And when done correctly, and I don't know if there's any science from your experience doing training, if like actually after the rupture or, you know, tear or whatever, that it can actually come back stronger, right? Because I think every challenge, every thing that we go up against, either individually or within the system, we end up becoming stronger in the long run. So yeah, what's coming up for you as I ask that?
Yeah, what comes up to me is like my AT brain goes to the soap notes. It's almost taking a step back and saying, okay, when you have a process or a problem or a solution, it's okay, subjective, objective, assessment, and plan. And that's where structure can be so vital, is when you are dealing with a bunch of different chaos and there's all these different areas that are coming at you. Sometimes be able to structure is great when you can actually, okay, organize your thoughts and be able to come together. What is required in order to be able to apply structure is communication and alignment. What is the priority? One of the great leaders that I've been around, and it's a lineage, it's almost having small goals within the greater goals of that are day to day. So when in athletics, as I've worked in athletics, you know, the three goals that were given to me was earn and maintain the trust of every coach, player, and staff that you come across. Working at the highest level that any coach, player, and staff has seen, and being a good teammate within the greater, you know, ecosystem. Those are things that were passed down. So when you having wins and losses, when you orient yourself to that being the priority, you put yourself back in position to continue to move forward. It's not going to all be rainbows and sunshines. It is what it is. Everyone thinks that it's this, like, when you get into like, oh, that's so woo-woo and it can't be that easy. What I'm saying by all this is when you keep trudging along in the mud, because that will reveal itself when you're in high pressure ecosystems and you're in those moments when wins and losses might mean jobs, might mean changes. It might mean a lot of different things. So it's not just thing that's like, oh, well, we'll just get better next week. It means something to you. And when you're competitive, no one likes losing. I don't like losing. No one does. That's stuck. You have to extract the fact that it can help you be more successful down the road. But even beyond that, it's just a part of the journey. And so the areas that I've always seen is when everyone is bought into the process. And sometimes the process is the only thing that you can control. I've been a part of teams that have gone, you know, we went 14-2 one year. We went to the Super Bowl, right? And we were down 28-3. Okay, we came back. I've been in teams that were 13-3 and we lost in the Super Bowl. I've been in teams that were 8-5, but they were a really cohesive unit, which set them up for the next year for the player to win a Heisman. So I've seen a lot of different areas. It's just it's when you talk about repair and recover, if you're doing a rehab, it's knowing, hey, having that conversation on the front end. At the end of the day, we're going to have surgery. It's going to have a plan in place. This is what we found. These are the expectations. This is what we're going to focus on this week. This is what we're going to focus on today. This is what we're going to focus on right now. This is our goals for this end of this phase. And then so it's almost making it systemic in your ideology of like where it's all moving forward. So it might feel slow at times when you're in the process, and it might feel mundane. It might feel like you're stuck, as long as you keep showing up. And you have a lot of people that continue to show up, and the ones that don't will naturally find themselves outside the boat. But the ones that show up every single day, and it's not to be like in a positive mood all the time. It's not all positive. It doesn't always feel good. And it's embracing that beyond how I feel about the situation. I am going to continue to show up and just give all that I have. Some days your A is just literally showing up. Some day your A is having the greatest ideas and having them come to fruition. It's showing up and continuing to commit to the process and to commit to the people who are implementing the process. And when you do that, regardless of the situation, and that's a reflection of leadership being able to do that too. Everybody has to show up. Everyone needs to be held accountable to that standard of expectation of how to show up, how to be present, what it looks like. Who are we when tough times are? Don't tell me how you are when we win. Tell me how you are when you lose. Can you handle it? The true winners are the ones that can handle defeat and use that fuel to drive them even further. That's what it looks like to repair and recover. And the teams that truly are great are truly resilient. They're built on a foundation of resilience, alignment, and trust. And when you trust the process, and when you are aligned, and when you know that you get hit in the face and you take it and you keep punching, you keep fighting, keep showing up, giving everything that you have, that's when you know you're on the right track, because you have tough people, tough minded, a tough mindset. You have an identity, because that's who we are. That's what we do. And we show up regardless of what the situation is. And that's how we're going to win together. We're going to win together.
There's a part of me that's just kind of chuckling inside when you're talking about the ability to like return to the mat, keep showing up, keep putting in the time, putting in the reps. There, I was on the women's U.S. national team for water polo for 13 years. And I can tell you, there is a handful of practices. You know, I'm thinking specifically, we would train 6.5 hours a day, 6 days a week. And there was a part of our training throughout the week that was just circuit training, which is basically, you know, we have 6 to 8 different exercises, or literally the torture.
Call it what it is.
Sessions. And I remember, like, I was laughing. You're like, maybe some days you're just showing up and that's 100% for you. But there's been a handful of practices where I've just like been going through those circuit trainings with just tears rolling out of my eyes, but still like getting through each, like 30 seconds on, you know, 10 seconds off, minute on. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, will it end? This is where, you know, I just thinking in my mind's eye that I'm thinking about, what is Australia doing right now? What is Hungary doing right now? Like, this is killing me and breaking me right now, but I'm still going through the process. And it may not look from, you know, the outside like I'm strong and solid, but yet I'm still managing through it and the emotion as it's happening. And so I just kind of like laughed on the inside of like, yeah, not every day is perfect. Not every day has the energy to back you, but the process will hold you. Leadership will hold you. And leadership is not only your head coach, but your assistant coach, your staff around the edges, the trainers, your teammates. Leadership is so, it's at every level and, you know, within all of us to a certain degree. And that leadership is tethered to your role and your responsibility. That is,
yes.
And it obviously can always grow beyond. It always has the opportunity to impact way outside of what that original role and responsibility for you in initial assignment. And so I just, you know, I think about that and the importance of just one person's off day of energy is another leader's opportunity to step in and guide and move and push. I want to talk a little bit about leadership. And again, we can think about it on all these different levels throughout a team and an organization. But what would you say separates leaders who stabilize people and systems under pressure from those who maybe unintentionally amplify stress and or dysfunction in a system? What really separates, you know, the leaders who do and who do not?
Yeah, I think there's not one type of personality, doesn't look one way, shape, or form. I think the greatest leaders are the ones who know who they are, and they know how to lead, and they know what they're trying to accomplish, and they're willing to love the people that they're leading and called to serve as a leader, but they think like that too. They realize that it's a call to action to add. John Maxwell said this best. He said, true leadership adds value to people. The greatest leaders realize that you win with people. You win when you know that the people are put in the best position for success. And that comes with celebrating wins, individual wins, allowing people to feel seen. It's also being vulnerable and showing people who they are and being willing to acknowledge where they do fall short, and also holding people accountable. And all these things, sometimes I've had so many different types of leaders through my career, and I've been coached hard. I've been put in positions, but I've seen some coaches, some of the greatest coaches have the ability to talk to one person in a complete different way, maybe chew them out. And then this other person has to go, you know, they're there, you're the greatest. Like, there's a lot of different ways to package it. It's a high level of emotional intelligence that realizes how to package it for both in the common way. It's like the parents always say, I love my kids all the same, but you have to treat them differently. If I didn't get treated differently than my sister, I mean, I would have been in trouble. Like, my sister would have been in trouble, truly. Because at the end of the day, like, you have to, it's a people business. Leadership is a people position. That's it. It's not this role that you get because it pays more money. That's a manager role. What leaders are, they assign an opportunity. Or as they take the assignment, they accept the call to action to serve people in that way and guide them because that's their role, and guide from within. The ones that are truly great communicators that can articulate what they're thinking, how they're going upon it, sometimes having the ability to have discernment on what's in, how to share and what to share, because at the end of the day, sometimes people just need to see the baby. They don't need to see the process. And leaders have a good ability, and they have a great ability to not only show people what all the different parts of the process that are important for them to see, but they bring them with them. They always help them elevate to create another generation of leaders who will then pour down to the next generation, and then so on and so forth. You know, there's so many different examples of that, but the great leaders are the ones who have generations that have gone, come and gone well past them, that are still reflecting what it looks like that's, you know, that's happened before them. They might package it differently. They might have different personalities, but they keep the things, like, I've always, regardless of what setting I work in, those three goals that I outlined before, I'm going to carry them because my mentor learned that from his mentor, from his mentor. That's a fourth, fifth generation. So it's carrying the torch and realizing that being a leader is a calling, and it's not, everyone is called to be a leader in some capacity, whether you're leading yourself or leading a group of people. We are all leaders. It's just a matter of what position is best for you to serve that.
Absolutely. You talked a bit about emotional intelligence and how great leaders influence, impact, and work with different personalities to suit that personality, not that the leader comes with one style and forces that onto different individuals' personalities. So we talked about emotional intelligence. I'm curious of if you've been able to witness, experience, and or feel when a leader is emotionally regulated or having nervous system regulation, and what the impact on the system's trust, communication, and the decision-making within the system because of that emotional regulation or nervous system regulation. Do you have any examples or perspectives on regulation and leadership?
Yeah, I think that's another thing. That goes back to self-awareness of leaders. I think the great ones have that ability. And I've seen that from all the different areas that I've worked in, whether that was human performance or organizational development. You know, in the human performance area, I've seen it firsthand where you're navigating situations where you're dealing with an emergent situation on the field, where you're trying to save lives. And I've been fortunate to work with some of the greatest athletic trainers I've seen. And they are so calm. They are just working the process. Once again, you practice the emergency action plan for these times when you break glass in case of emergency. And when those times show up, they realize that the most important thing is to create calm in the space so that you can make informed decisions that at the end of the day has life implications. When you have that stress, whether you're a surgeon or an athletic trainer or in the medical field where you are dealing with life or death situations in the most emergent times, when you have that mindset, you have to trust your training. Because at the end of the day, you know that your training is the thing that's going to have to carry you through navigating that situation for something that is greater than any win or loss. There's only one win or loss, life or death. And so I think when you see that in the human performance side, you see it with people navigating emergency situations, navigating, okay, your star athlete tears their ACL. How do you navigate the communication? And then simultaneously with organizational development, you know, same thing. You know, a lot of the stuff is like, you know, we worked with a lot of different areas and subsets, especially mental health was one of those considerations. It's okay if someone has a mental health issue or challenge or thing that arises, or a personal a loss of life or ideation of anyone's life. You know, those are serious situations, and so different. Same outcomes, same wins and losses, but those are it's when you have those situations, those leaders take the time to sometimes fake it till you make it, because you just have to prioritize the thing that's greater than yourself. Whether it's the team clinician or the leader that's the head coach that has to make a call in certain ways, shape, and form. I've seen it from a lot of different angles. But the one, when you are self-regulating and you know yourself, you can say, okay, I'm going to acknowledge and honor the fact that there might be a process after this situation right now that's in front of me. I'm not going to lose sight of that. I'm going to just prioritize what is in front of me right now and realize that I will come back to that later, because you don't want just the leader that can just be uber present all the time and just ignore the fact of that they feel like, wow, I just saved someone's life, or I just put someone into this position, or I just made this decision that is gonna like have ramifications on me. The leaders that understand that, it can, once the dust settles, take the time to be with their family or have a mechanism that's healthy that they can tap into, whether it's meditation or going for a walk or just getting a lunch by themselves or just kind of resetting how, what makes sense. They have a reset tool. It all looks different for all the different ones that I've seen. And then not only that, the elite ones can take that, take notes during the situation, document it, and then be able to teach it and what they learned through it. You know, that's Viktor Frankl, A Man's Search for Meaning, where he was so present in a concentration camp where he had to fight for his own survival, but then simultaneously had the ability to document the different experiences of his, you know, the people that he's with in the concentration camp so that he could use this as a lesson to teach us what truly life is all about by packaging that in the book that he wrote. So the leaders that can self-regulate live time, it's so hard, and that takes practice, and that takes not handling it well sometimes, handling those situations where you crash out on the back end. Sometimes you have to learn that's the best way. It's like, I don't want to go back there again. I want to make sure that moving forward, I continue to serve not only the person that I'm helping, but myself, and serving myself and being able to self-care on the back end of things.
I love that you lift up the human moment of maybe not handling things to the best of one's ability to be able to learn how to arrive in a more regulated or beneficial way in some of these situations. I think having the opportunity to have the repetition, make the mistake, recover, rest, and implement again is so important to build strength in how to show up, how to, you know, pause, assess, make the decision, recover, and then be able to move forward in a way where everyone's needs are met and you're leading through either grief or pain or challenge. It is most definitely a skill, and I think is important to acknowledge and lift up within leadership. So I appreciate that insight. I'm curious of what lessons from the NFL translate most powerfully to business and organizational leadership, and what's one myth about high performance that doesn't translate at all?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think when I think of what translate, there's so many lessons that you hear in boardrooms that translate because they're actually using sports analogies, right? You know, let's go hit a home run. Let's knock this out of the park, you know. And I think when I think of the things that translate is for businesses, identify for your employees what your Super Bowl is. What does it look like for winning the conference? What does it look like for winning the division? What does it look like for winning this week's game? What does it look like in winning training camp? What does it look like to have a successful offseason? All those are things that in the NFL happen all the time, and they're packaged in. And, you know, with that comes in, okay, strategically onboarding. Looking at, okay, player acquisitions, player trades, navigating family affairs now, because now as the NFL has evolved, they realize and recognize that they're, you know, managing a lot of different things in areas that are, you know, pertain to the athletes, coaches, and staff. Being willing to acknowledge that the services that are rendered to the athletes need to be heightened. So mandating in the CBA, things like that. So it's almost looking at the thing that everyone watches on Sunday and realize, okay, what does it look like to draw parallels to sports? Finding people that can translate it to the business world. There's so many crossover to the preparation of a season, in season, to also, okay, what's your focus on quarter one? What's your focus on this year? What's the budgetary considerations? How many people are we hiring through HR? Who do you want to promote? What's the contingency plan for when the CEO steps down? They're all very similar and packaged in a different way. One just happens to be more visible on a day-to-day basis on the news than the other. And simultaneously on the other side, that kind of segues into my next point of there is a difference of being when not even voluntarily vulnerable to the public, where every detail that you do is scrutinized anytime. So when I was an employee of the NFL, my focus was not only in the building, but being a representative of the organization as well as the NFL anywhere I went, how I acted. So there was a governor that I always had when I put the foot on the gas pedal sometimes, where, you know, like, you know, people, you have to live in a certain way. Whereas when you're in the corporate space, that pressure is a little different. You know, you have a little bit more grace. You aren't going to be scrutinized. If you make a mistake on a weekend, you're more times than not going to have your article in the newspaper. But if you're an intern for an NFL team who makes a mistake and it's at the wrong time, at the wrong place, and someone catches it and they put it online, that could be a fine for $100,000 for that organization. And so there is a different level of, I think a lot of times people can look at athletes in the athletic space as if they're going to an aquarium and they get to watch people swim around and they get to, oh, I like that fish and I like that fish, but they don't realize what it's like to actually be in the tank. That tank is full of sharks. And when you're navigating that space on a day-to-day basis, it is a pressure cooker that if you don't self-regulate and you don't know who you are and why you're there and being willing to say, I am here and I don't letting imposter syndrome even kick in at times of like, how did I get here? When you're in that environment, it's very hard to replicate that feeling on a day-to-day basis. And when you know that something can happen at any given time and the trickle-down effect, it's like any bad decision can lose your job. Any leadership change that happens, you might be doing the best version of your job, showing up every single day, doing your job. But if there's a coach or GM that gets hired, and they don't know you, or there's not a familiarity, like you immediately get wiped out. Yes, there's layoffs in the corporate space and there's things like that, but that's not as personal typically. That's because there's a greater purpose for it from a budgetary standpoint or a restructuring framework. But like sometimes it's just a matter of like, you are associated with the CEO or the GM or the head coach before I got here. You're not my person. I want to hire my person who might be less qualified than you. He or she might be someone who's never even done the role before. At the end of the day, there's just different considerations of like when you're working in sports, you do have, it's an opportunity to, when you look at it as an opportunity, it's an opportunity to realize and recognize that you're accepting a pressure that you know that you have a time on a shelf. You know the time is going to end at some point and you don't know when that clock ends for yourself. And so when you have that pressure, you know, if you have a job in corporate, you're going to get another job in a different space. In athletics, everyone's window closes.
Yeah, I think what's resonating with me, I was just at a LA 28 Olympic summit and the lead marketing gal for this initiative really painted a clear picture. It was one statement she made that it like really hit me. And it was that athletics and sports is personal, but it's not private. Athletics and sports is personal, but it's not private. And so there is a level of exposure that truly comes with the responsibility of representing an elite athletic team and organization. I do absolutely agree with you that there are not jumbotrons in, you know, or big cameras in, you know, offices with leaders filming every decision they're making on their screens and on their notepads, right? Where that is very much the reality of the sport that you came from. And I think there is something to be said about, you know, companies that are private versus going public and what their responsibilities are and what their exposure is. And I also think that, you know, I would agree with maybe there is a little bit more wiggle room as the organization is representing the mistakes and successes that are happening with these companies versus it, you know, like you dropped the ball, you missed the block, you didn't hit the pass, whatever it may be. I think that there's a little bit less exposure of that in the corporate world. And maybe there's not, you know, I think there's probably parallels that we can, you know, draw with all of that. But I think this, the statement of sports being, you know, very personal, but not private, and that our wins and losses are very much on a main stage that are seen. So I appreciate that. I would like to close by asking if our listeners and leaders who are hearing this podcast today focus on just one shift, one way of shaping their environment, presence, and or system, what would have the greatest impact on culture and performance over time from your perspective?
Say good morning. It's something so basic. And when you say good morning, it signals to your people something greater, that regardless of the task that you're going to assign, regardless of the thing that you know is on a time crunch, if you can slow down enough to say that I prioritize our engagement as a human being because this is a people thing, when you can do that and you can take that time to say good morning, start with a greeting, start with a smile, show them that you are a person. Show them that you're there to relate and connect the dots. I used to get my interns, they used to laugh all the time. They're like, okay, like start, good morning. Like let's start there and do it over and over and over again, because that signals how you're going to show up. Even if you're going in a bad day, you're choosing good morning. You're choosing to start with people. You're choosing to be there presently. And when you start something as basic as good morning, when you have that rapport, then people who receive that, you don't know what kind of day they're having. When they can hear that and they can maybe you help guide them in a different way. Maybe you just recalibrate how their day goes. It's something so basic, but it really represents something greater. When you can find your good mornings, find a way of where you can show the pause as a leader that not everything's chaos. When you have enough control and self-regulation to be able to start and pause, whether that is saying, hey, what's up, or talking about a sport that pertains to the person that you're speaking to, or an area of interest, or hey, did you see that concert's coming into town? Whatever your good morning is, find that. Find that rapport that you can have on a consistent basis that's so small, but that seed will evolve into such a great, strong tree that will bear so much fruit beyond your wildest dreams. When you start with people, and you know that that's the main focus of every single day, magic will happen. Things will evolve in the way. And at the end of the day, when you talk about vision, then you get your goal.
Protect the time for the human moment to build safety, trust, and rapport. Thank you so much for your time. It's been such a joy to explore all of these topics with you. Thank you for your energy and just how you painted pictures for us and clearly communicated throughout this interview. It has been so much fun, Daryl. Thank you so much for your time. you enjoyed today's episode, please take the opportunity to share with a friend, follow Mindful Warrior Radio, and leave a review. To learn more about Mindful Warrior and Mindful Warrior Radio, please follow us on Instagram at The Real Mindful Warrior and check out our website at www.mindfulwarrior.com. I look forward to our next discussion here on Mindful Warrior Radio.